Welcome to Shattering This, a program devoted to the most important, fastest-growing, and now largest segment of society. To those who've come to realize that the world's political, religious, military, economic, and media institutions are corrupt, that they've become counterproductive, and that they cannot be fixed. Our phone number, if you'd like to participate in this discussion anytime over the next 2 hours, is 877-376-45. Alina Shanarev, 24 years old. She is the sister of the living and deceased Boston Marathon bombers. And she herself now has been indicted for making a bomb threat. Yes, Islam is a lovely religion. She is the sister of Jokar and Tamerlane Shanarev, the latter of whom was killed in the massive militant police hunt that shut down much of Massachusetts in the wake of the bombing. Mrs. Shanarev was charged with harassment after she threatened to bomb another woman to death. The recipient of the threat called the New York police. Her boyfriend, as it turns out, shares a child with the woman who was allegedly threatened with the bombing. I just thought you'd like to know how lovely Muslim women can be. Today we learned that a second American, also from Minneapolis, he's been killed while fighting for the Islamic State. The death follows that of Douglas McCain, an American who grew up in Minnesota. McCain, 33, was killed while fighting for the Islamic State in Syria over the weekend. Both McCain and the second American, both from the Minneapolis area, which is home to the largest population of Somalis outside of East Africa. It has become a fertile ground for Islamic terrorist groups looking for recruits. As many as 40 young Muslim men from Minneapolis have joined the Islamic State. 40 from Minneapolis. As they have recruited jihadists through social media. One of McCain's high school friends, Troy Kattiger, joined the terrorist group Al-Shabaab, that's the lads, in Somalia, and even made a recruitment video for them in 2009. He also was killed in the fighting. At least Islam is good at one thing. It kills the best Muslims. They die living out the lifestyle that was enshrined by Muhammad. They are now even targeting young women. Yes, they are looking for sex jihadists. They want someone to satiate the carnal desires of those fighting for Allah and Muhammad throughout Iraq and Syria. The mother of an American journalist being held captive by the Islamic State has issued a direct plea to the group's leader, which is still being presented as Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, even though that is not his name. You know, if you're going to address him, you may want to get his name right. I know that's tough for Americans because they pray to a Jesus Christ, which is wrong on both accounts. They pray to a God that they say in God's name, Amen, praying to the Egyptian sun god, Amen-Ra. They pray to a God that they call the Lord, which is Satan's title. So I understand that surely Sutloff, the mother of 31-year-old Stephen Sutloff, may not know that his name is Ibrahim and that his last name is not the Baghdad, and that Abu Bakr is Abu is just a It's like saying, you know, my uncle, my niece, my friend, the jovial, you know, it's a common sort of surname, if you will. I don't know what they call that kind of thing, but my bud, sort of. So Abu is not part of his name, and al-Baghdadi is not his name either. They even say he's the leader of ISIS, but he's not. It ceased being ISIS months ago. I think the West doesn't like the fact that if they write is, since is a verb, it really sounds stupid to say the leader of is, particularly when it needs the definite article because it's the leader of the Islamic State. And so when you say it's the leader of the is, it even sounds stranger. But the one thing that politicians and media spokespeople alike don't want to say is Islamic State, because somebody somewhere down the road may actually make the connection between Islam and reprehensible behavior. She said, "My son Stephen is in your hands." No, he's not. "You, the caliph, can grant amnesty." No, he wouldn't grant amnesty. That wouldn't be in his nature. "I ask you to please release my son." Please. Well, there you go. You're talking to a man who has orchestrated the beheading of hundreds, the crucifixions of scores, the decapitation of many hundreds more, that enslaves women so that they can serve as rape victims for his, as a reward for his jihadists, just like Muhammad used to do. And you think he's going to release your son because you say, "Please, release my child." Your son, sweetheart, is 31 years old. He's not a child. I know he may be a child to you, but he is not a child in anyone's eyes other than you, so don't speak of him as a child. "I ask you to use your authority to spare his life. This is an Islamic terrorist group." Surely? Surely you understand that. They don't spare life. Islam is a death cult. Muhammad never gave Muslims a reason to live, only a reason to die. Muslims constantly remind us that those who are not Muslims love their lives, while Muslims cherish death. As a mother, I ask you, and he will know nothing of as a mother. Women in Islam surely have no rights. They have no respect. Women in Islam are abused when they're little girls with sexual genital mutilation. And then as women, they're abused by men who own them. So don't speak of as a mother as if he's going to relate to that. He's not. You know, if you want to speak to someone in these kind of circumstances, it behooves you to do a little research to know who you're talking to. As a mother, I ask your justice to be merciful. There is no justice in Islam. There is no mercy in Islam. There never has been mercy or justice in Islam. And not punish my sons for matters he has no control over. You know, when Muslims fly planes into buildings screaming Allahu Akbar, when they go into towns of Shiite Muslims or Zoroastrians, or when they pummel Christians, it's not that the Christians, the Zoroastrians, or the Shiites have done anything to them. When they flew planes into the buildings of the Pentagon or blew up embassies in Africa, when they blew up bus stations and trains in Europe, when they detonated schools and theaters in Russia, there was no one in those facilities that was guilty for doing something hostile to Islam. There wasn't a single enemy of Islam in the group. Muslims don't determine who they're going to kill based upon the victim's participation. That's the nature of terrorism. Random targets. You know, Muslims will go off and just lash out and kill without any regard to whether or not the victim is deserving of even animosity by Muslims. My guess is that when they kill 3,000 people in the World Trade Center, in the Pentagon, and on those four crashed airplanes, that there wasn't a single person who died as a victim that was aware that Islam was a terrorist dogma, that Muhammad was the most repulsive, sexually perverted, mass-murdering man who ever claimed to speak on behalf of God. They didn't know that. They were innocent. So why are you pretending that it ought to matter to Caliph Ibrahim that your son is not responsible for the matters that are confronting the Islamic State? He doesn't care. Stephen has no control over the actions of the U.S. government. He is an innocent journalist. You know, journalists aren't innocent. They're complicit. That just says the journalist that's telling the story. Absolutely complicit. You are complicit when you report stories inadequately, inaccurately, and when you are unwilling to hold people who are deceiving accountable. When you promote deception. Like, why call it the leader of ISIS when you know it's the Islamic State? Why refer to Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi when you know that his name is Ibrahim? Why do those things? She also invoked Islam in a bid to persuade al-Baghdadi. I ask you to use your authority to spare his life and to follow the example set by the Prophet Muhammad, who protected the people of the book. She lied. We'll return to that statement after the break. Can you imagine Ibrahim laughing when he hears this woman say, I ask you to use your authority to spare his life and to follow the example set by the Prophet Muhammad, who protected the people of the book, she said.
She might want to read what she's actually...
Yeah, might want to read the Islamic books. You know, there are five sources that cover the words and deeds of Muhammad, written within, compiled really, within 200 to 250 years of his death. Only five. Those five are comprised of exactly the same things, which are hadith. That includes the Quran. The Quran is an oral report from Muhammad and his companions. It was passed along from mouth to ear for about five generations before it was actually written down. The same thing is true with the collection of hadith, which are oral reports from Muhammad and his companions. Only five sources. Those five sources all concur. They tell the same story. And what they say is that Muhammad systematically hunted down and robbed, exiled, enslaved, raped, and murdered all of the people of the book, which he viewed as the Torah, prophets, and Psalms. And then he expanded it, which would mean, from his perspective, Ya'udem, Jews. And then when he overhunted Jews, having robbed, enslaved, raped, and murdered all that he could reach by camel from Mecca and Medina, he expanded his prey to Christians. Now, that's the bottom line. There were four communities of Jews, people of the book, that Muhammad could reach. He robbed, exiled, tormented, raped, enslaved, and or murdered all of them, without exception. And then he began to attack Christians after he had overhunted the Jews. So when you make that kind of a statement, woman, I understand that you're concerned about your son. But why not approach a Islamic cleric? And Ibrahim is a cleric. He's an Islamic preacher. You know, he's not a militant in the standard sense. The leader of the Islamic State is an Islamic preacher. That's his education. That's his occupation. He's an imam. He's trained to be a cleric in Islam. You really ought not embarrass yourself with these kinds of statements. You know, it's not making matters better for him, and it makes matters worse for anyone who reads a story like this that is clueless as to what Islam is actually about. Which, unfortunately, because the media are not innocent but complicit in misleading the world, as are politicians, as is the military, is the vast preponderance of people. But this is pathetic. Don't do such stupid stuff. There's only one thing, that will cause your son to be released, and that is the payment of a ransom. Now, that ransom can come in one of two ways. It can be paid by cash, which, as an American, our government won't allow. Our government engages in the payment of ransom, but it won't allow its citizens to do so. They trade for Bergdahl was a ransom. They ransomed five high-ranking Taliban members for him. That's a ransom. And with the Islamic State, there are two forms of a ransom. One is just simply money. $1 million would probably get him free, no matter what they're asking for him. $1 million would probably get him free. And, or weapons. Recently, Qatar, who has been the primary gunrunner for the Islamic State, has played a role in getting several captives freed because of their great relationships with these fundamentalist Islamic terrorists, because they offer them weapons. Those are the two ways to get him back. And those are the only two ways. Dateline London. Islamist opposition fighters in Syria, including members of the Al-Qaeda affiliate, and they didn't mention it by name, but let me share it with you. It's the Al-Nusra Front, the Victory Front, took control of the Quneitra crossing point on the demarcation line with the Golan Heights. Now, that's a fairly serious development in this story. We'll return to it. Yeah, this is a very serious turn of events. The Al-Nusra Front has taken control of the Syrian border of the Golan Heights. It brings the Islamic militants within 200 yards of territory that's controlled by Israel. Now, the Golan's a small area, but it is really important. Now, Israel's a really tiny country, so small area is still significant for Israel. The reason that Israel controls the Golan is really twofold. Prior to the 1967 war, the Syrian Muslims under Assad used to routinely lob mortar shells down on Galilee. Galilee sits right below it. It's the watershed for Israel. It's the breadbasket, if you will, of Israel. And from the elevated position of the Golan Heights, the Muslims just routinely lobbed artillery at the civilian positions. And during the 1967 war, the Six-Day War, Israel could have taken over Damascus, could have controlled all of Jordan, all of Syria. Boy, I tell you what, can you imagine how much better the world would be had they been allowed to prevail, but the United States stopped them. And they said, you know, there ain't no way we're giving the Golan back, considering what the Muslims did the last time that they controlled it. And so during the Yom Kippur War, the Syrians, with outnumbering the Jews 100-1, with vastly superior tanks and with air cover, and the element of surprise, began a tank assault on Jews. And miraculously, I mean, it must be the single most miraculous battle in the history of warfare. More than Thermopylae with the Spartans and the Persians. You know, we were dealing here with the Russian equipment that the Syrians had being vastly superior, including they had night vision on their tanks, and the Israeli tanks were blind at night. The tanks were vastly better armored. They were more maneuverable. They were higher capacity. Every aspect of the Syrian equipment was vastly superior. They had the element of surprise, and they outnumbered the surprised Jews on Yom Kippurim, their holiday, 100-1. Guess who won? Yes, indeed. And so ever since that time, the Jews have occupied the Golan.
I have a quick question.
Yeah.
What year was that again? And all that?
That was 70. That battle was 74. The first one was 67 when Israel captured it, and then 74 on the Yom Kippur War.
And it was Russia that gave the Syrians?
The Syrians were using Russian tanks.
Russian tanks?
Yeah. So, back in the day, just to interrupt for a second here, back in the day, Russia was the primary arms supplier to almost all Islamic countries, and America was vying for that right. Now, Russia is the arms supplier basically to Syria, and all the rest of the Islamic countries, all enemies of Israel, feast on American weapons. In fact, the amount of shipments, like Qatar recently, you know, it's a postage size country. I think it's only 200,000 citizens of Qatar, and they're buying scores of billions worth of Americans' most sophisticated armaments, including having an enormous and very technical air force.
So, is the only reason why we came to the aid of Israel at that time because Russia was on the other side?
No, we didn't come to the aid of Israel. That's always been a myth.
Well, I'm saying that.
We supplied Israel with some military. Actually, we give Israel some aid. We began to give Israel aid because of we wanted them to give up the Sinai and to Egypt, and to get them to give up the Sinai, America said, all right, we'll supply both Egypt and Israel with some aid, but Israel's aid has to be used to buy American military equipment. And yes, it was a way to confront the Russians.
Okay.
Yeah.
Isn't it weird that we're now the ones supplying all the Muslims with arms and everything
that?
And
it'll
probably be Russia that will be the voice of reason.
It has been for the last 10 years. Russia has been the voice of reason. We don't want to take that too far. Russia. I think Putin and Russia are. I have been to Russia recently, and I was in Russia during the time it was the USSR. So I mean, I have been all over Russia, and Russia essentially has gone from communist to fascist. And I would not view Russia as a bastion of truth and liberty. But I would tell you that on the international stage and from a military point of view, a destructiveness point of view, Russia is vastly more peaceful and moral as it relates to how they engage in the world than the United States is.
Kind of
that's
sad.
Really, it's disappointing that our country has fallen that far. So it's not because Russia is good. It's because the United States has become really extraordinarily evil. Now, the move brings the Islamic forces, and this is al-Nusra, within 200 yards of Israel. Can you imagine? I mean, right now you've got 40 Minnesotan Muslims that are out fighting for the Islamic State. Can you imagine the number of Muslims that are going to flock to Syria if they're fighting Jews? If they expand the battle and it's not the emirate that they're establishing, the Islamic State, pushes its borders and begins to fight in Israel, there aren't enough ships and planes and trains in the world to supply the number of fundamentalist Muslims who will want to engage in the Great Jihad. Now, it's just a matter of time. And the Golan, by the way, is adjacent to Jordan. It's just a matter of time before the Islamic State begins to wage war in Jordan. And by the way, when they enter Jordan, what they're going to find is that the Muslim population there, which identifies themselves with the Palestinians, is going to rally to their side against the king, Abdullah. And while that will expand their territory and their numbers considerably, the big issue here is they're now a couple of hundred yards from warring with Israel. That changes the dynamic beyond comprehension. Now, I understand that Shirley thinks that Muhammad protected the people of the book, but they were his primary prey. An activist in the area, well, I don't know what an activist is. What is an activist? That's somebody that jumps up and down and waves their hands today. I don't know what an activist is. Contacted by Skype, said a coalition of Islamists, including members of the Al-Qaeda-linked Nusra Front. By the way, the Nusra Front was not conceived by Al-Qaeda. The only difference between the Nusra Front, which this is the first time they've been in the news now in months, I mean many months, because most of the al-Nusra members joined the Islamic State. Almost all of them just integrated into the Islamic State. They were battling one another, and as I said, they departed al-Nusra in droves. But al-Nusra was founded by fundamentalist Muslims in Syria with no affiliation to al-Qaeda. The only reason they're now linked to al-Qaeda is because al-Qaeda's lone spokesperson, Zawahiri, scolded the Islamic State. He hates the Islamic State. In fact, going back even prior to Zawahiri to bin Laden hated the Islamic State. Back in the time that it was the Islamic State of Iraq. They hated it. And so when there began to be confrontation between the two, al-Nusra liked the endorsement of Zawahiri and the condemnation of the rival Islamic State. And that's really the only link to al-Nusra as it relates to al-Qaeda. Anyway, they opened this assault on the government-held crossing early Wednesday, and they have captured some 50 United Nations forces there. Militants with a rival and more extreme Sunni militant group, the Islamic State in Iraq and Syria, as it's called here. It's still, I don't know why they want to continue to write that. It simply is now the Islamic State. Have spread from Syria and now threaten northern and central Iraq. They don't threaten it. They control it. The Israeli military said one soldier and a Israeli civilian were wounded in the crossfire from the clashes in Quintrara. On Wednesday, prompting an artillery barrage against the two Syrian army positions in the Golden Heights, the latest of several occasions where Syria's civil war has spilled into Israel, prompting retaliation. Israel said it has no interest in further involvement, although they did engage ever so briefly and against the Syrian military. Yaakov Amador, a former Israeli national security advisor, said the reports of the Nusra Front taking control of the Golan Crossing is very significant, particularly if the group managed to link that position to its stronghold in Daraa in southern Syria. But Mr. Amador, who served under Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, said Israel should not interfere in the conflict and should respond only if attacked. The Syrian Observatory for Human Rights said the activist group based in Britain that gathers information from conflicts inside Syria said that the fighting killed at least 20 government soldiers. Actually, it looks like the government soldiers were murdered. They were captives and they were beheaded. Syria lost the strategic Golan Heights to Israel, as we talked in the 1967 war. Israel later annexed the area. It has since been left in ruins, really. Accounts of the fighting were unclear, but some activists, again, what is an activist here? Said that, I guess, the activists or somebody that actually reports on behalf of the Syrian Observatory for Human Rights, I guess, would be the activist. Said that some members of the Western Bank and secular Free Syrian Army. That's the first time we've heard of the Free Syrian Army in a very, very long time. And the Free Syrian Army now is fighting with al-Nusra, which means that they aren't moderate, Mr. McClown. Yes, the story is that 43 United Nations troops have been, they're armed and they work for the United Nations. They're peacekeepers. Are captives now, and hundreds more are penned down. This was a sad, sad story. It was a show that I watched on occasion. It grew old because it just became too much bickering, and and for the most part, the show is Sons of Guns, and I'll tell you the story here in a moment. But for those who have watched the show, there's a guy that, I mean, if he has an IQ of 70, I'd be surprised. End up marrying Will Haydens, who is the owner, at least was the owner of Red Jacket Firearms. And he married the daughter, who also worked for the firearms firm. And the kid knows nothing about weapons, knows nothing about firearms. And he's just dumb. You mean dumb as a stone. And the whole show, it just evolved into, let's make something that blows things up. Well, as it turned out, all Will Haydon has a proclivity to rape little girls. Actually, his daughter. Here's the story. Sons of Guns star Will Haydon has been arrested again, this time for aggravated rape, according to documents sent to Fox by East Baton Rouge Sheriff's Office. The allegations have prompted the cancellation of the Discovery Channel series. Given the seriousness and horrific nature of the charges against Will Haydon, we have decided to halt further productions of Sons of Guns and cancel the series, the network said in a published statement. Haydon is accused of raping a minor, his daughter, almost daily since March 2013, and taking her virginity when she was 11 years old. The girl is Haydon's daughter. During an interview with detectives, the alleged victim said that she did not report the sexual abuse because she was terrified Haydon would hurt her. The most recent abuse of the now 12-year-old girl occurred during July of this year, according to the documents. The alleged victim claims that Haydon told her, "Don't tell him nothing," speaking of the girl's reporting to the police what was happening, "because I'm all you've got." This is a quote. Red Jacket Firearms has initiated and received full legal separation as an entity from William Haydon. With heavy hearts, we will continue to operate and ensure the fulfillment of our new customer orders, bank orders, and provide support to those affected by these new developments. Yeah, right. You're done. Earlier this month, on August 9th, Haydon was arrested for molestation of a juvenile and aggravated crimes against nature, whatever an aggravated crime is against nature. I would assume that he was arrested for the sexual molestation of a young girl. He posted his $150,000 bond and was released. At the time, his lawyer told Fox News that the charges had stemmed from a conflict with a fired ex-employee who was seeking revenge. It didn't turn out to be true. Following the initial allegations, his daughter, Stephanie Hayden Ford, who appears on the show with her dad, took to her Facebook page to deny reports that the hit series was in trouble. Guys, the show's not canceled! Exclamation point. Yeah, right. We so appreciate the outcry of injustice, but it's not true. I guess some people just need the ratings. No, pedophilia is not one of those things that tends to stir ratings. We're on hold with filming while my family takes care of a few things. Thank you for standing with us. Good grief. Speaking of good grief, Equatorial Guinea's ambassador to the U.S. is suspected of beating his daughter, not once, but multiple times, with a wooden chair. He broke off the leg of the chair just so that he could be more effective in beating her, but he has diplomatic immunity. Police in Arlington, near Washington, D.C., were called to Ambassador Ruben Maynus Magu's residence on Monday of this week. The police spokesman, Sternbeck, said that they found the juvenile with large cuts and abrasions to her head, as well as multiple other injuries. We determined that the ambassador was the primary and sole suspect. The girl had sustained a significant beating.